Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll be discussing the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, renowned Philadelphia journalist and former Black Panther who's been on Pennsylvania death row for more than 23 years. In the early hours of December 9, 1981, Philadelphia police officer Daniel Faulkner was found dead on a Philadelphia street corner with Mumia Abu-Jamal lying nearby, unconscious in a pool of blood, shot once through the liver. While the events of that fateful night may never be known, one thing is certain. Abu-Jamal was convicted of Faulkner's murder and sentenced to death. But the case against Mumia has been condemned worldwide by supporters and activists who say the original trial was marred by prosecutorial and judicial misconduct. Falsified ballistics evidence was introduced, witness testimony coerced by police, and the dismissal of 11 qualified African-American jurors are just some elements of an unfair trial, they say. Mumia has consistently maintained his innocence in the killing, and his supporters have demanded a new trial. Substantial evidence of his innocence has come to light since the trial, including a confession to the Faulkner killing by a man named Arnold Beverly. Most of this evidence has yet to be presented in open court proceedings. Based on a motion filed by a former legal team, in late 2001, Federal District Court Judge William H. Yawn Jr. threw out Mumia's death sentence, ruling he was entitled to a new sentencing hearing, but the decision denied Mumia the right to a new trial. Legal wrangling in the case continues, and at present, Mumia's case is simultaneously being heard in two different courts, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals and the Pennsylvania State Court of Common Pleas, both of which sit in Philadelphia. Joining me by phone today to speak about the latest situation in Mumia's case is Robert R. Bryan, lead attorney for Abu-Jamal. Based in San Francisco, Robert R. Bryan has specialized in death penalty litigation for three decades and has appeared as chief counsel in numerous capital cases. Bryan is a member of the bar of the U.S. Supreme Court, as well as California, New York, Alabama, and various federal courts. A fellow of the American Board of Criminal Lawyers, Bryan is a former chair of the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty and served 10 years on its board of directors. In 2003, he agreed to become lead counsel for Mumia Abu-Jamal. Robert R. Bryan, it's a real pleasure to have you with us today on Rockin' the Boat.
It's a pleasure to be joining you, Vinny.
So maybe if you can just talk a little bit about some of the elements of the original trial, some of the things which people have pointed to. I mentioned some in the top, but there's been significant misconduct in this case. Maybe can you touch upon some of the evidence that was presented that might have been falsified or, you know, some of the other attributes of this trial?
Well, I probably will tend to talk more in big brush strokes. I'll blame it on Mumia. I've spent too much time with him, maybe. But the biggest issue that's a thread that runs from the morning of his arrest in 1981, December of 1981, through today is racism. It's reared its ugly head, racism. At the time he was taken into custody, as you mentioned in your opening, literally he was in the process of bleeding to death. The cops picked him up, rammed his head into a telephone post, threw him in a wagon, so to speak, and hauled him off to the hospital and threw him on the floor there in the emergency room. One of them stomped him. Another one kicked him with nice little comments, racially slurred comments directed towards him. So that's the way all of this began. There's some new evidence. Well, let me say this. He was tried before a judge who's now gone on to the great courtroom or in the sky or hell or wherever the people like him go, by a very bigoted racist judge named Albert Szabo. Albert Szabo was responsible at the time, and he may still have the dubious distinction of being responsible for having sentenced more people to death than any other judge in the United States. And of course, the case was tried in Philadelphia. Szabo really turned the tables against Mumia. Mumia wanted to represent himself because he had a lawyer who was, like many court-appointed lawyers, not very dedicated, not very good, and this was the biggest trial in the history of Philadelphia. And the lawyer just seemed to be overwhelmed. I mentioned some new evidence. We've discovered that Judge Szabo, during the trial, and this is new evidence. This wasn't known until recently. Relatively recently, during the trial, during Mumia's trial, which was in 1982, in a recess, Szabo commented as he was about to re-enter the courtroom for Mumia's trial, "I'm going to help them fry the," and he used the N-word referring to Mumia. In other words, he referred to Mumia in the most racially offensive manner imaginable. He also, in that one comment, exhibited an attitude that he was going to see that Mumia was convicted and fried, executed. So the theme of racism began with the Philadelphia cops at the time of the arrest, went through the trial, and it really continues into today. And there are many other themes in the case besides racism, but that just seems to be one that one you just can't get away from in any aspect of the case. There was no investigation by the defense attorney. The jury only heard one side of the coin, only the prosecution's version of what happened. The prosecution, we know now, have evidence, deliberately got people to lie in order to convict Mumia. They withheld exculpatory evidence, evidence of innocence. They did everything they could to pack the courtroom and the whole proceedings, to slant them against Mumia, like having a lot of cops come in and sit in the courtroom in their uniforms in a trial with the jury looking at them, a trial involving a cop who was killed. The jury was given the impression that this cop was really a good old boy who was killed, and in fact, you know, I have evidence that this was a bad cop, a really bad cop. And so it was a case tried, permeated with racism, a very biased atmosphere, a monster for a judge. I've been before bad judges, even once, one who once held me in contempt of court and threw me in jail, but Sabo tops anybody I've seen or heard about. And of all the capital cases, and all I do is death penalty work, of all the death penalty cases I handle and have handled through the years and the numerous murder trials, including many in the South years ago, I've never seen a case in which the prosecution so badly, the government so badly wants to see someone executed. And then that's saying a lot, because that's the norm. But in this one, it's the super norm. I mean, they want him so badly that it's almost like the old saying about they want to kill somebody so badly they'd sit in his lap in the electric chair.
Why is that?
This may be the best question you'll ever ask about Mumia, and that is, why is that? And the reason is that Mumia, at the time of his arrest, Vinny, was, as you pointed out, he was a very prominent African-American journalist in Philadelphia. He was very well known for exposing corruption and misconduct by the police, local governmental officials. And they vowed that, and they had said to him that one of these days we're going to get you. And they thought by convicting him, putting him on death row, it would shut him up. The irony is that his radio commentaries are heard today weekly by people in countries circling the globe. So he's heard more now from death row than he was when he was free. And the government knows that the only way they're going to be able to shut up Mumia Abdul-Jamal is to kill him, to murder him in the name of the law. And so that's really, in a nutshell, what this is all about. It's a politically charged case, and politics is what's driving the engine of the move to kill him.
We have a little bit of background and understanding as to what's happened and why. Maybe let's talk about what currently is before the courts. The case, as I mentioned, is before two courts simultaneously, the state trial court as well as the Third District Court of Appeals, or Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Can you tell us what are the issues right now before the courts?
All right. Well, first, we're, as you said, we're like patting our stomachs and rubbing our heads at the same time. We're in state court and federal court. The reason we're in state court is I cannot present an issue federally without it being presented first in the state court, what we call in death penalty litigation exhaustion. There must be exhaustion of the issue. And I filed in December of 2003 a habeas corpus petition in the Court of Common Pleas, which is the trial court in Philadelphia, regarding some new evidence. And it concerns two aspects of the case, both of which touch on police fabrication of evidence and innocence. One involves a witness, Yvette Williams, an eyewitness who testified for the police that she saw Mumia shoot the cop. A woman's name was Cynthia White, a prostitute who testified for the prosecution. Cynthia White admitted to Yvette Williams that she lied And Yvette said, "Oh, really? Well, I thought you saw the shooting." She said, "Oh, no, I did not see it. I walked up after it, right after it happened." She said, "Well, why would you be testifying? Why did you say you saw it?" And said, "Well, the police said that they would help me and take pressure off of me and do favors for me if I would testify against Mamiya." And they said, "Well, anyway, he's guilty, so it will not make a lot of difference." So this woman lied. So that's one of suborning perjury by the police and the prosecution. The other big issue that's pending in the state court now is involves a witness named Priscilla Durham, who was a wannabe cop, a security guard at the hospital where Mamiya was taken after he was shot. She testified at trial that Mamiya admitted having killed the cop.
This is the famous statement he is alleged to have made on the gurney in the hospital,
right,
at the time when he was unconscious, possibly dying at the, you know, from a gunshot wound to the liver. He allegedly made the statement that I shot the MF-er and I hope he dies. Is that?
That's, you got it. Yeah, that's exactly it. And there's a relative of this woman who gave that testimony. His name is Kenneth Pate. Pate said that she admitted to him that she lied. And just as with this other witness, he asked the question. He said, "Well, why did you say that?" And she said, "Well, the cops told me that we're all in this together, that we're a brotherhood of cops, and we've got to stick together, and he's guilty anyway. So, you know, it would help a little bit." And that's pretty amazing. I mean, we know people lie in court and make mistakes in court, but it seems to be almost a common denominator with the prosecution. So anyway, that's pending. The Court of Common Pleas issued a preliminary ruling on May 27, indicating that it's called a memorandum in order. This judge said she was going to dismiss on technicalities, saying this, you know, in effect, the statute of limitations. It was, these issues should have been raised long ago. Of course, no one knew about these witnesses, this new evidence, long ago. So I will be filing a motion trying to persuade the court to change its mind by June 16. Assuming that's denied, then I will be appealing this to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. So that's generally what's happening on the state side. Federally, as you mentioned, we're before the United States Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit, which is just below the U.S. Supreme Court. It sits in Philadelphia. And we have a habeas corpus petition. Well, it's a review of the habeas corpus petition that was denied in 2001, which you mentioned. It involves one issue has been accepted for consideration on appeal, and that is racism. Again, here we are, racism. Racism in jury selection. It's called a Batson issue because it's named after a famous case named Batson, in which the U.S. Supreme Court held that the prosecution cannot systematically remove people because of some characteristics such as their race, and that's what the prosecution did. That issue has been accepted and is pending. I'm about to file a motion asking that five more issues be accepted for consideration on appeal. I'm a little nervous about having all my eggs in one basket on only one issue, but standing between Mamiya and being executed. One involves his right to effective assistance at trial. The attorney, as I mentioned earlier, did no preparation. There was no investigation in preparation of the trial. Another issue, which I think is quite extraordinary, is that Mamiya asked to represent himself because he was so poorly represented. U.S. Supreme Court held some years ago that one has a right, wise or not, even if it's not a wise decision, to represent oneself. It's a constitutional right. The court stripped that entitlement from Mamiya. Mamiya was actually removed from the courtroom during significant parts of his trial, and I'm not talking about one time, a number of times, and the judge said, "Bailiff, take him out, remove him," and what that was all about was that Mamiya was standing up making constitutional arguments, well, on constitutional grounds, 5th, 6th, and 14th Amendments, regarding his right to self-representation. And the judge did not want to hear it. And when they removed him, and there is some law that a judge can remove somebody if they're really disorderly, which Mamiya wasn't, but even if you give the judge the benefit of the doubt, the person has to be able to hear what's going on in his or her trial and be able to communicate with his or her attorney. And he was just removed. It was like he could have been in Antarctica. He had no idea what was going on in the courtroom. So that's another issue I'm trying to get certified. And, of course, finally, the bias, the bigotry of the trial judge, which I just could not in good conscience proceed on behalf of Mamiya without raising this issue. It's just that, as I said earlier, I used the term monster. The judge was a racist monster in this case. So these are the issues. There are many other issues, but at this stage, you pick your best, from a constitutional standpoint, and that's an overview of where we are in the U.S. Court of Appeals.
Now, haven't these issues already been presented by other lawyers who have represented Mumia in the past? And have
they in the state courts?
Only in the state courts.
Exactly. Well, and then they were presented in the U.S. District Court, and I could not present these in the U.S. Court of Appeals had they not been presented previously. And what the U.S. District Court did is denied in December 2001 a new trial for Mamiya, and that's my goal. I'm not trying. I do not want him executed, but my goal is much higher than saving his life, even though that's a pretty lofty goal. What we want is the case totally reversed, it to go back to square one in the trial court in Philadelphia for Mamiya to get a fair trial, in which all the evidence is presented, not just a distorted version, part of the evidence, and before certainly a more fair judge and a more racially mixed jury.
What is the likelihood of that happening?
The racism in jury selection, the Batson issue, is a very strong issue, and the other issues I mentioned are strong, but that one is particularly strong. You know, I don't take cases to lose. I take them to win, and I'm confident we can do it. However, people must bear in mind that this being a political case, anything could happen. And Mamiya's been sitting on death row over 23 years. We're getting real close to the point that either he's going to be executed or we will get a new trial. So, you know, we're in the home stretch, so to speak.
In 2001, as I mentioned, Yon overturned the death sentence and essentially sentenced Mumia to life in prison.
Well, he didn't sentence him. What he did is overturned it because of an error in jury instructions made by this biased judge, Sabo. What the prosecution did is immediately appealed.
So that's still on appeal.
Yeah, so Mumia is still on death row. He's still under a sentence of death because that reversal has been stayed. And I can give you, if you would like, a couple of scenarios of what could happen in this case.
Yes.
Okay. One scenario would be if the court, and that's the other issue on appeal, is whether or not the death penalty should remain as it is now. If we win on that issue only, Mamiya is not off a death row. He goes back for a new trial before a jury in Philadelphia, but only on the question of whether he gets life without parole or death. So it's a death trial. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. He's not just, in a court of appeals is not going to say, and they cannot say, okay, the death penalty is out for this case, and that's the end of it. Peace be with you. If we win on that issue, we go back to trial on the issue of death.
In that scenario, there would be no new evidence presented.
Exactly. Basically, that's it.
And some other scenarios?
Another scenario would be if we lose on the appeal involving jury selection bias, ineffective assistance of counsel, all that, and if the prosecution wins on the death penalty, we lose on the death penalty, then there is nothing else. Mamiya will go, he will be executed, he'll go to the death chamber. So that's the second scenario. A third scenario would be if we do win on one of the issues affecting the trial itself, what we refer to as the guilt phase, and we win, we get a reversal, let's say on racism and jury selection or incompetent counsel, what have you, then the case, and that's what our ultimate goal is, would go back for a new trial. It would go back to the very beginning of the case.
As if he had never been tried and convicted.
Exactly.
So it would just be, he would be an accused person in front of a jury of his peers, theoretically, and theoretically a fair judge.
Yes.
And all the new evidence, all the new, you know, the ballistics and all these different people's testimonies would just be thrown out, wiped clean, start from scratch?
Yes. I mean, it would be a totally new day in court. And he would have a new lease on life. And, of course, the outcome of that, again, there are a couple of scenarios which are kind of obvious, I guess. One would be he could be convicted, sentenced to death, and go back and be back where he is now today. The second scenario would be he could be convicted, sentenced to life, which is unlikely. I think either he gets death or he walks. And which would be the third scenario, and that is a third scenario would be acquittal, in which he would be able to go home to his family. And there is a fourth scenario, and that would be somewhere between guilt of first-degree murder and being acquitted. And that would be because the shooting, even if you take the worst-case scenario, it happened very quickly. It was dark. You've got a cop beating somebody with a heavy metal flashlight, some shots fired very quickly. So let's say a jury could say, well, we're not sure on the innocence issue, but it was a shooting in the heat of the moment, and therefore we're going to return a verdict of, let's say, manslaughter or second-degree murder. So there's that in-between area, too. But this case is so polarized, it seems that one would think that it would be one extreme or the other. Either he's acquitted and goes home, or he goes back to death row and is ultimately executed.
I wonder what your thoughts are on the strength of the Beverly confession, why you're if that's something that you want to pursue in the courts at this time.
Well, he didn't really confess. Confessions were when somebody sits with the cops and says, I did it. What he did is made a statement years later, a claim that he did it. There's also evidence that somebody else committed the homicides that's been around since the beginning, very powerful evidence, and that is this cop who was killed stopped a car. Not Mamiya wasn't in it. It was his brother and another person. And on the wee hours of the morning, and it was still dark in downtown Philadelphia, 1981. The second person in the car named Freeman, Kenneth Freeman, actually fled the scene. He was seen fleeing the scene, running away. Before other police units arrive, and I don't know why people have ignored that through the years, but there's some pretty powerful evidence that he may have actually fired the fatal shots. On the same day that the police firebombed the MOVE people and were responsible for burning alive not only adults but children in Philadelphia, Freeman was, his body was discovered somewhere else, but it had the earmarks of a police killing. And the Beverly evidence came along many years later, and I don't know what to say about Beverly. I mean, he did say he did it. If I have any criticism, is that whether or not Beverly is telling the truth, and there are some problems with what he's said or claimed. In my opinion, in any particularly capital case, but in any case, but certainly a death penalty case, if somebody pops up years later and says, I did it, I think with it being a life or death issue involving somebody sitting on death row, that the least a court could do is to have a hearing on it. You know, let the person testify. Let the person be cross-examined and see whether or not, see whether or not it's viable. And if I've got a criticism about the Beverly situation, and as I said, I'm obviously not real convinced about him because there's evidence of somebody else that's pretty powerful. But in any case where somebody confessed, there ought to be a hearing. And there wasn't on Beverly, and I find that outrageous. But there's nowhere, as a matter of law, there's just nowhere we can go on the Beverly issue anyway. It's been denied, and that's over. So if we can get a new trial, then some decisions can be made as to whether that's credible enough to be presented. The problem, if you present evidence, as you may know, that's not credible, particularly when you're before a jury, it can backfire and come back and really bite you. But we're not there yet. That's where we're trying to get to in this case. And then decisions like that can be made.
Of the three scenarios that you laid out, the second one, wherein Mumia would basically get a new trial and possibly be convicted again, do you think that it's possible he could even get, at this stage, after so much publicity and notoriety in this case, could he even get, if he were to get a new trial, could he even get a fair jury?
Well, let me answer it this way, Vinny. If I retried the case, one of the first things I would do would be to ask for a change of venue, to have this case moved out of Philadelphia across all the way across the state, the ideal place would be Pittsburgh, because the majority of people who go to death row, the one place where most of them come from in Pennsylvania, is from Philadelphia. Very few come from Pittsburgh. It's just a much fairer system there. It's a much more unbiased atmosphere, and I think there should be a change of venue. I mean, I just a case this politically charged, you know, it's why try it in the belly of the beast? It's like going into the lion's den unarmed, you know. And Philadelphia is very well known. It's very well documented, and particularly in recent years, of there being a lot of governmental corruption, particularly among police. And these are the people who are after Mumia's blood. It's the Fraternal Order of Police, which is a very powerful organization, has a lot of money, and as I said, they would almost sit in his lap, one of their members in the death chamber, just to see him die. They want him so badly. That doesn't make for a very fair trial. So could he get a fair trial in Philadelphia? I don't know if the case stayed there. Normally I would say no, but this being a political case, if we had the right judge, and it was tried, we were allowed to try it for what it is, a political case, getting into the motives of why he was prosecuted, why he's been sitting on death row, why these people want to kill him so badly, being a prominent journalist. You know, if we could turn that around, then we could, I believe, probably get a fair trial there, but it would be much more likely if the case were moved far away from Philadelphia.
I guess, finally, what would you recommend people do at this stage? Is it useful to contact courts, or what can people do concretely to affect this case?
You know, people get asked to contact courts, and the problem with that is if I'm trying to persuade a judge to rule on Mumia's behalf, the last thing I want are people to be harassing a judge. That's just common sense. I think demonstrations are great. I think making a lot of noise, I think public education, to people to be demonstrating, let's say, outside the courthouse and making a lot of noise, that's great. I like that. And I think publicizing this case, people knowing the truth and knowing how outrageous it is for this brilliant person to be sitting on death row, sitting in prison, much less on death row, how outrageous that is, that needs to be known. There are a number of websites available that are quite good. I think Prison Radio, which is based in San Francisco, if they have a website, they record weekly Mumia's commentaries and then get them out to radio stations like yours throughout the world. That's a good place, and I'm sure they can always use some help. There's another one, the name of it is just freemumia.org, which is a good site. And there are a number of other organizations, and I think just activism, anything anybody can do to get involved and raise a ruckus about this case is helpful. You know, people need to know and be outraged. And I might conclude with this, Vinny, if I may, and that is that the reason this case is important is people are interested because it's not, as Mumia keeps reminding me, it's not about just about him, but it's about him as a symbol. He's representative of all the men and women on death rows, not only in the United States, but throughout the world, and all political prisoners. And I think anybody on death row is a political prisoner anyway. And he's also a symbol of, hopefully, our fight against racism and injustice. And so it's relevant not just to people in Pennsylvania, but this case has a relevance to people everywhere, plus the fact that this is a man who's outspoken against injustices committed daily by the United States in places like Iraq, what the United States is doing to the environment and affecting the whole world, the Bush administration. He's very outspoken against these type of injustices and wrongs, and people shouldn't be in prison, much less have to give up their lives because they're outspoken. And Mumia is a political being, very much so, and that's why we're having to talk about this today. I don't think he would be on death row. He would not be in prison if he weren't so outspoken politically, and that's what he's all about.
And you just listened to an interview with Robert R. Bryan, lead attorney for renowned Philadelphia journalist, former Black Panther, and death row prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal. Thanks for joining me today on Rockin' the Boat here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, streaming live at www.freakradio.org or wherever else you're tuned in.